August 12, 1962. Heat here in the east and a long July drought, finally broken by the rains that beat down this week. Heavy, drenching rains they were, and insistent, as though trying to make up for being late. Rain, too, on another August not so long ago, August 12, 1935. It was a Monday. Clouds over the Central Plains area and stretching down the lower Mississippi into the Gulf States. And heat. It was 86 in Chicago that day, 96 in Atlanta, and it got to a sizzling 110 degrees in Redding, California. The Italian government announced that day they had devised a new and powerful air weapon, presumably to be used as defense against the bow and arrow army of Haile Selassie. And a German youth married a young German girl. The occasion was noted in the American press only because the couple had refused a church ceremony in favor of a pagan ritual once current among the pre-Christian Goths. Details were slim, but the ceremony opened with the blowing of a bugle. But it was 1935, and both Germany and Italy were far away. August 12, 1935, 27 years ago today. At Bloomingdale's in New York City, you could buy a hard worsted suit with extra pair of trousers for $25. Women's Persian lamb coat sold for $195. Elizabeth Bergman was starring in a movie called Escape Me Never. Clark Gable and Jean Harlow were in China Seas. And on this very radio station here in New York at this very time was a young singing group called The Rhythm Boys. Even across the gulf of more than a quarter of a century, you can sense their competence.
She's got eyes of blue. I never cared for eyes of blue. But she's got eyes of blue, and that's my weakness now. She's got dimpled cheeks. I never cared for dimpled cheeks. But she's got dimpled cheeks, and that's my weakness now. Oh, me, oh, my.
Earl Carroll's sketchbook was on Broadway, lavish with songs and color and girls, girls who were 6 feet tall and mostly undressed. There was Tobacco Road and Anything Goes, but mostly we listened to a voice more reminiscent of Oklahoma than Hollywood or Broadway. Listened easily and comfortably, as one does to an old family friend, and never dreamed that time was running out. His name was Will Rogers.
You know, last week I told you about the Rogers Giant Lottery Plan. Well, that's received endorsement. It's beyond any expectations that I possibly could think of. You know, there's bills in Congress now to carry on and legalize lotteries. And I received a wire this week from a congressman friend of mine who wants a copy of my plan to read into congressional record. Now, I feel pretty good about that. That's the highest praise that a humorist can have, is to get your stuff into congressional record. Just think, my name will be right in there alongside of Huey Long's and all those other big humorists. And did I ever tell you, I don't know whether I did or not, did I ever tell you about the first time I ever had any of my stuff in that daily? Well, I'd written some fool thing, and it pertained to the bill that they was arguing, or that they was kidding about, rather. So some senator read my little article, and anything that a senator reads goes into the record. So, well, another senator rose and said, you know, and as they always do, if you've ever seen them, does the gentleman yield? They always say that, but they call each other gentlemen in there. that's the way they do. They're very polite in there. And but I must get back to my story. When this senator read my offering, the other senator said, after all the yielding was all over, and the other senator said, he says, I object to the remarks of a professional joke maker being put into the congressional record. You know, meaning me, see? Taking a dig at me, see? See, they didn't want any outside fella contributing. And, well, he had me wrong. compared to them, I'm an amateur. And the thing about my jokes is they don't hurt anybody. You can take them or leave them, you know what I mean? But with Congress, every time they make a joke, it's a law. You know? And every time they make a law, it's a joke.
August 12, 1935, King George of Breton went for a ride on the royal yacht and was duly photographed coming aboard. There was speculation in Washington that Herbert Hoover would be the Republican candidate to run against Franklin Roosevelt again in 1936. The speculation was wrong. Heat and rain in the Central Plains and the lower Mississippi, and a voice so familiar that we thought childlike that it would always be there.
I got a plan that'll stop all wars. When you can't agree with your neighbor, you move away. Or with your wife, she either shoots you or moves away from you. Now that's my plan. Move nations away from each other. Take France, Germany. They can't agree. I'll take France and trade places with Japan. Let Japan live there by Germany. And if those two want to fight, well, let them fight. Who cares? We'd run excursions to war like that.
August 12, 1935. 3 days later, an Eskimo named Claire Okpiasha came breathlessly into the village of Barrow, Alaska, with doleful news. Airplane fall, he said. Maybe two men's die near my camp. Indeed, two men had died. One was the pilot, the world-famous Wiley Post, and the other his passenger, a grinning, sandy-haired cowboy-turned-comedian from Oklahoma. And we all knew that something fine and splendid had gone from our lives. And we tried to put it in words. Carl Sandburg tried.
You could say of his face that it was homely as a mud fence, and yet as beautiful as a sunrise over an Oklahoma field of alfalfa. He was American, of ancient and modern American blood. He had a proper pride in speaking of Cherokee Indian blood in his veins. It was a historic moment when in the White House, he and President Calvin Coolidge talked about their Indian ancestry. And it was also a historic moment for laughter gay and free when Will Rogers announced, "My ancestors didn't come over in the Mayflower, but we was there to meet the boat." He said, "We was there," not "we were there." He made free to say, "I never let grammar get in my way."
August 12, 1935, Hitler and Mussolini hurrying forth to meet their squalid destiny. A new and devastating air weapon announced. And yet it's curious to mark those things which summon back for us the essence of that day. Rain in the Mississippi Valley. A worsted suit for $25. Some kids singing on the radio. Memory is vagrant and selective. And survival, I suspect, depends more on intimacy than on greatness. The youngest son of an important and accomplished man was asked in later years to account for his father's greatness. "I really don't know," was the answer. His work was something apart. What I really remember is that one day he helped me fly my kite.
"The winds of March that make my heart a dancer. A telephone that rings, but who to answer?